Gene yesterday under reports, not to go into great detail. Rather, we'd set aside time today to do that. So I'll turn it to Gene.
I'm not sure exactly if you want to go into any specifics of the order. I think we covered most of that. One of the things that the agency and I wanted to accomplish today was to present to the council for its consideration and possible concurrence on the draft report that the court had ordered to be completed in its January 26 order concerning the applicability of the mixed stock exception in the context of Framework 42. So I don't know if we should just go straight into that. Is that what you'd like to do? All right, this is a document at 8A. Before I get started, I wanted to describing the order, which unfortunately got picked up in my hometown newspaper. It was probably beyond my professional status to describe the order in those terms. It was born out of my own and the agency's frustration in trying to make sense of this unexpected order from the court that suspends in its entirety all the Framework 42 measures and has caused obvious confusion and chaos in the fishing industry, as evidenced yesterday and today. So, setting that aside, let's turn to the to this document on 8A. I guess our intention in presenting this to the council is to try to urge the council to, if it can, to concur in this draft. Certainly, it can be edited or amended as necessary, but to try to get concurrence at this council meeting, and I understand it's very short notice for that. In light of the court's time frames for submitting the report that he has required. The order requires a report to be submitted in 60 days. The only council meeting scheduled is this one within that 60-day period. I believe the next one occurs in April, which is outside the 60-day period. So short of an emergency council meeting or some delegation from the council to another body in the council, such as the executive committee, the groundfish committee, or some other committee, we will really not be able to get any kind of buy-in from the council on this further consideration and analysis of the mixed stock exception. So with that as an explanation of what we're intending to do with this draft, let me just go into, as quickly as I can, a summary of what's included in the document and try to highlight the most significant points that we're trying to make in this draft. This was not my draft per se. It was basically a draft that was put together in-house by NIMS with my input as well, and I drew the straw for presenting it. The first part of the report is just a general background to try to put into context the mixed stock exception. It explains that the mixed stock exception was drafted as part of revisions to all of the national standard guidelines that NIMS felt were necessary to respond to and incorporate more strict and measures that the 1996 Sustainable Fisheries Act imposed upon fisheries management. Now, the Sustainable Fisheries Act actually did not change National Standard National Standard 1, which is that any fishery management plan or amendment thereto must prevent overfishing while achieving optimum yield on a continuing basis. What the most significant thing in the context of what we're discussing today that the Sustainable Fisheries Act did was to add a very specific set of requirements concerning rebuilding of overfished fish stocks. In Section 304E of the Magnuson Act, the Sustainable Fishery Act imposed very strict time frames on rebuilding overfished stocks, in most cases 10 years or less. And there are certain exceptions that are not really applicable to the stocks in question and the stocks that were affected by Framework 42. So in interpreting the applicability of the mixed stock exception as it was drafted in 1998 and put into effect in 1998, it must be viewed in the context of this overarching, in essence, overriding requirement to rebuild fish stocks within the statutory time frame. And on page 3, we've quoted exactly what the mixed stock exception says. There at the bottom of the page. And the conclusion we draw from looking at this, and that we think is the reasonable interpretation, is that by its plain terms, this mixed stock exception applies only to overfishing requirements. That is the term that's used in this paragraph 6. There's no mention of exempting or accepting the council or NIMS or any fishery management plan from the rebuilding requirements, in particular the rebuilding requirements of Section 304E that I just described. Therefore, when interpreting whether a mixed stock exception is a viable alternative, there's this, what we consider to be a threshold question of, will using the mixed stock exception on any one stock or group of stocks that would allow continued overfishing jeopardize the more restrictive overarching requirement to rebuild overfished stocks within the statutory guidelines? If that threshold question could not be answered in the affirmative, then there is no need to consider the mixed stock exception nor the three criteria under that exception, because by definition it would not be appropriate if it would lead to or jeopardize achieving rebuilding objectives. Now, in 2006, Congress amended again the Madison-Stevens Act and made some additional adjustments to this Section 304E regarding rebuilding requirements. In particular, the 2006 reauthorization actually made a requirement that any stock that is overfishing on any stock that is determined to be overfished must end immediately. Overfishing must end immediately. The requirement to end overfishing immediately was not in the Sustainable Fisheries Act of 1996, nor was that term used in the mixed stock exception that was implemented in 1998. But the 2006 reauthorization of the Madison Act has imposed that term. The National Marine Fisheries Service, to reflect these additional requirements under the reauthorized Magnuson-Stevens Act bill, decided that it needed to revise, again, National Standard 1 guidelines, not just for addressing the mixed stock exception, but for a variety of reasons, including the requirements to establish ACLs and AMs. So, but with reference to what we're talking about today, the National Standard 1 guideline concerning mixed stock exceptions was retained, but was fairly significantly altered to reflect this interpretation that I just gave you of the 1998 mixed stock exception, which is that it's only applicable if it does not jeopardize rebuilding requirements and timeframes for rebuilding in the Magnuson Act. So on the bottom of page 4, top of page 5, the newly revised mixed stock exception, which, by the way, is scheduled to become effective on February 17th, next week, contains a couple of provisions that incorporate the interpretation concerning the requirement to rebuild fish stocks. One is found in the chapeau paragraph M, the last sentence, which is at the top of page 5, which says the council may decide to allow this type of overfishing, that is, mixed stock exception overfishing, if the fishery is not overfished and the analysis demonstrates that all of the following conditions are satisfied. Now, one of the so that sets the threshold question that we had interpreted into the mixed stock exception in 1998 directly into the actual language of the exception in this newly revised version. And then paragraph 3 further expands on this idea of not interfering with rebuilding objectives by saying that the resulting rate of fishing mortality would not cause any stock or stock complex to fall below its MSST, which is essentially the overfished standard where a stock is considered to be overfished, more than 50% of the time in the long term, although it is recognized that persistent overfishing is expected to cause the affected stock to fall below its BMSY more than 50% of the time in the long term. Now, this essentially is saying the mixed stock exception would be applicable only if we're talking about a stock that's not overfished, and then only if all three of these criteria, including this third one regarding achieving rebuilding objectives, are met. So if we put these two guidelines side by side, and it's and the approach that we have here in this report is to tell the court that under either the 1998 guidelines as interpreted in terms of not jeopardizing rebuilding objectives and the 2009 version and restatement of the mixed stock exception, which explicitly prohibits the use of this exception on overfished stocks and also on even on stocks that aren't overfished if the result is to cause the stock more than 50% of the time to drop below its rebuilt level. So with those, with the description of the context in which we think the appropriate interpretation of the mixed stock exception should be considered in, we can move to the status of the stocks as described over several pages beginning on page 5 that were the focus of Framework 42 measures. And these pages describe how Amendment 13 set up two approaches to addressing overfished stock and overfishing. One was the adaptive approach, which was to get overfished stocks immediately to their FMSY, which is the fishing mortality rate that is designed generally to achieve rebuilding objectives. And the other was the phased approach, which was an approach that would allow overfishing to be ended over time rather than immediately, so that the ending of overfishing would be phased out in order to mitigate impacts rather than requiring overfishing to be ended immediately. Now, ironically, that approach is the functional equivalent of a mixed stock exception that was adopted in Amendment 13. It was something that really didn't dawn on the council or the agency at the time we were addressing comments to Framework 42. But in retrospect, I think it's very important for the council to take into account this concept that Amendment 13, through the phased approach, essentially ended up in the same position that a mixed dock exception would have ended up in, which is that overfishing is not ended immediately. It's phased out in order to mitigate measures. But still, the council explicitly realized that the phasing out could not go on forever, that it eventually had to go to the measures addressing the overfish condition of the stocks had to go to a point where overfishing would be ended. Otherwise, rebuilding of those stocks would not take place. So with that as a backdrop, look at what happened with Framework 42. Framework 42 was the biennial adjustment that was required by Amendment 13 to look at the progress of fish stocks that were overfished, to look at the stocks that were subject to the phased mortality reductions, which are listed in the middle of page 7 there. Three of them are the focus of Framework 42, by the way: Cape Cod, Gulf of Maine Yellowtail, Southern New England Yellowtail, and White Hake, and to see whether sufficient progress was being made in order to determine whether additional adjustments had to be made to the fishing measures in order to ensure that overfishing was adequately addressed and rebuilding objectives were still on track to meet the statutory deadlines. GARM 2 looked at these stocks, and it was determined that all of the five groundfish stocks that are listed on page 8 that were overfished at the time Amendment 13 went into place and that were the subject of the Framework 42 measures were still overfished, had not made significant progress towards rebuilding, and in fact were significantly below the trajectory for achieving the rebuilding objectives of Amendment 13. The GARM also found that Georges Bank Winter Flounder was being fished at a rate higher than its overfishing rate, although at that time it was not yet determined to be overfished. Now, since then, GARM 3, Georges Bank Winter Flounder is not only above its overfishing level, but it's considered to be overfished as well. So, Framework 42 was, the measures were adopted at a time when any lessening of overfishing restrictions would have guaranteed that those stocks would not reach their rebuilt states within the time frames mandated by the Madison-Stevens Act. The chart on page 9 shows how significantly overfished they were at the time Framework 42 was put into place. You see that all of them required significant mortality reduction targets to get them back on track to reach their rebuilding objectives, and that in GARM 2, 2004, the stock sizes were all substantially below where they needed to be to reach these rebuilding objectives. So it is apparent, as is concluded in this report, that any further that these stocks actually needed more restrictive measures to stay on track to meet the overarching rebuilding objectives, and any lessening of measures to allow continued overfishing would undoubtedly jeopardize their ability to reach the rebuilding objectives in the time frame mandated by Amendment 13 and the Madison-Stevens Act. And that's looking at it in terms of the 1998 guidelines as we've interpreted them. And certainly under the 2009 guidelines as revised, any of these stocks that are still overfished at this particular point in time would not be eligible for the mixed stock exception. And if you apply the current guidelines to the status of the stocks at the time frame of 42 was passed, then they would also not be eligible for the mixed stock exception. So in conclusion, the way we interpreted the, and we think is the only reasonable interpretation of the 1998 guidelines regarding mixed stock exception, and the explicit statement of the mixed stock exception under the 2009 guidelines, none of the stocks subject to Framework 42 measures, which resulted in the two-for-one counting, for example, in the Gulf of Maine, could pass the threshold criterion of not jeopardizing rebuilding objectives. And for that reason, it's not necessary to consider the other criteria in the 1998 guidelines to determine whether the mixed stock exception was appropriate or not, and that the council and the agency really had no viable alternative under the mixed stock exception at the time Framework 42 was passed. And certainly under the current statement of the mixed stock exception, there is no room for applying it prospectively for this intermix of stocks that was addressed by Framework 42. So that concludes my summary of the report, Mr. Chairman.
Dave Preble.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. First of all, Gene, I your apology about your behavior yesterday, I think, is out of place. I like to see the passion. If you apply passion to these things, you manage to control your blood pressure. At any rate, I have three very quick questions. Is this report that you are giving us today, is that sufficient to meet the summary judgment requirement?
Well, ultimately, the judge will be the judge of that. But we think that if we show, we think that this would be appropriate if the council buys into it.
Okay, that brings me to my second and third question. On page 7 of the summary judgment, it says the court temporarily suspends Framework 42 pending serious consideration. And I listened to your remarks yesterday, and I'm wondering if it's your sense that if he accepts this, then he would vacate the summary judgment?
Well, that would be our hope.
Okay.
One reason why we wanted to get this before the council as soon as possible was that if we lose on our motion to alter the judgment that I said is still pending before the court,
right.
I think there's some confusion. The denial of our motion to stay is just a denial of a temporary relief while the court's considering the more permanent request for a vacature of his order suspending Framework 42. So, you know, if we lose or we get an altering of the judgment that doesn't seem acceptable to us, then we would hope that the judge could move quickly in deciding sort of the merits of whether there was any unlawfulness to not considering the mixed stock exception in light of this report.
Okay, and third thing, on page 7 under of number 4 at the bottom, the New England Fishery Management Council shall conduct this review process under the supervision of NIMS and Commerce. So that would mean that if this then is going to be submitted, that we need the council has to make a motion to accept this as the
That would be the ideal outcome.
You know, I'll make that motion right now.
You're not under our supervision, as you know, and we've actually pointed that out to the court.
Yeah.
That this is sort of a misstatement of the way things work in fishery management under the Magnus and Stevens.
Yeah, I made that point.
So
about
we can
the
avoid
chain of,
that
chain of command.
If you guys agree, if the council agrees to adopt this evaluation of the applicability of the mixed stock exception, as I've described it, we would essentially fulfill the requirement that council has conducted the review by considering and buying into it as drafted, and not have to to deal with the nuances of whether the council right. actually is required to do so or not.
Okay, I want to wordsmith that a little bit. I would say that the council adopts the draft analysis on the mixed stock exception as its report. I'm sorry, as its analysis under the summary judgment of January 26, 2009. Yeah, that would be it.
Is there a second? Seconded by Rip Cunningham. Anything further, Dave? Dave, anything further?
Oh, no. That's it. Sorry.
Let me turn off your mic. Thank you. Rip.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Gene, what if the council does not concur? Or votes down this motion and you don't get some sort of concurrence from the council concerning this, does that impact potentially the outcome of the court case?
Well, it raises a very key question. In part, it may depend on how the judge reacts to our motion to alter the judgment to reflect that the council really isn't a party and cannot be required to prepare this report, and that this is really more appropriately a report to be prepared by the agency. Now, if the court agrees with that request, with that part of our motion, then even without concurrence of the council, we could theoretically submit the report unilaterally and say, here is our analysis. We probably point out that we presented it to the council and they didn't agree. But, you know, in light of the fact that this is our determination, if that's what the judge decides, we'll have to, live or die on the report as prepared. Now, if the court somehow leaves open this question of what the council's involvement is in this, I think we may have to go back to the court for further clarification, saying that the council may not meet in time to fulfill what the court considers its obligation to be, ask for more time perhaps, but that runs the risk of the court perhaps leaving the order in place. So there's a lot of unknowns here. We could also perhaps submit the. If the court decides not to agree with us, the council can't really be ordered to comply, we may nevertheless submit the report and explain to the court that, we asked the council to concur. They could not. And we're asking the court to accept our report, notwithstanding the council's lack of concurrence. And I guess the final option is the council decides to undertake this on its own accord and submit it to the court with or without NIMS approval, although we're supposed to be supervising it. And then you do your own analysis. So I understand there's not a lot of clear guidance there, but I don't think there's any other way to look at it at this point.
If I may, Mr. Chairman, one more follow-on question. The analysis spends a certain amount of its effort describing and talking about the 2009 guidelines. What actual legal impact do they have on the court's decision, since they took place substantially after the time that the court made its decision? I mean, they weren't implemented, they weren't official language until after that time.
Well, the way that we're looking at this legally is that the court at most can remand to the agency or to the council to reconsider the applicability of the mixed stock exception. Our view, I believe, would be that in such a remand, we would have to consider current laws and current best scientific information. And under, you know, assuming this occurs after February 17th when the new guidelines go into place, current law should be the controlling law on how mixed stock exception is applied. It's really not possible to go back and redo Framework 42 per se, because we have different information. We're actually in the midst of doing an interim rule, which arguably supersedes Framework 42 if it's implemented. And the council's in the process of reconsidering all of the stocks in light of current law in Amendment 16. So, again, it's not clear what the court would do other than to remand it to the council and or the agency to do what it's already doing, in which case we think we would be bound by the 2009 version of the guidelines, not the old guidelines. So that's one reason why we wanted to look at it in terms of both guidelines, to take away any doubt as to what might happen if it is remanded to the agency or to the council.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This clearly is a very difficult issue for most council members to appreciate, since many of you are new council members and you haven't been here for the history. You haven't lived some of the history that went into the development of Amendment 13 and, of course, Framework 42. And now I believe the maker of the motion makes this motion largely because he has an understandable desire to get the Framework 42 measures back in place as soon as possible. And, of course, the Commonwealth has a similar objective in getting it back in place as soon as possible, but with some possible revisions, consistent with some of the arguments we made in our case and consistent with the judge's opinion. I certainly appreciate, you know, the report prepared by the service. I appreciate Gene's presentation. And, of course, the regional administrator, Pat Kirkle's involvement in all of this and the documents she submitted and the points of view she has expressed to the court. I, however, would have titled this report a little bit differently. It now reads, Consideration and Analysis of the Application of the Mixed Stock Exception to End Overfishing and Its Applicability to Framework 42 to the Northeast Multispecies Fisheries Management Plan. I would have named it more along the lines of consideration and analysis of the application of the mixed stock exception to Framework 42 to achieve optimum yield from the multi-species fisheries as a whole. I'm not trying to be cute, but that's the way I would have actually titled this, because that's what it's really all about. You know, your end result, I'm not going to nitpick this report. Obviously, I'm not going to do that. There's too much within it. And frankly, your end result, you know, your conclusion was predictable, because you stated more than once that you believe that if a stock is overfished, the exception cannot be applied. You believe it can only be applied if overfishing is occurring for a stock that is not overfished. Now, I and others have a different conclusion that results from our understanding, our interpretation of congressional intent. And that's really my focus, congressional intent. And I call everyone's attention to Congress's stated purpose described on page 1 of the May 2007 Magnuson-Stephen Fishery Conservation and Management Act. I'm not going to read it, but I just call your attention to it, because there we find the intent, what Congress is attempting to do in this act. You're representing a state, you know, the Commonwealth of Massachusetts. You know, I note the need for the council to use sound judgment and to take into account the social and economic needs of the states. Management is to be responsive to the needs of those interested and affected states. And that's what is indicated in the purpose of the Magnuson Act on page number 1. The guidelines are supposed to be consistent with congressional intent, that is, with the purpose of the act. Now, I've said it before, and I have to repeat it again, that the service really got it right in its 1998 guidelines, that Congress's intent is on fisheries, not on individual stocks. and it's on achieving optimum yield from the fishery as a whole. You know, back then, the service acknowledged that Congress did not mean to eliminate entirely the longstanding practice of allowing a mixed stock fishery to continue. That's stated right in the National Standard Guidelines, NMSA's interpretation of Congress's intent. However, obviously, to all of us who were concerned about this, your previous guidelines did send a mixed message regarding that intent. First, the service said in the guidelines, overfishing of one stock in a mixed stock fishery can continue if three conditions are met. Importantly, however, NMSA went on to say that identification of a stock as overfished does not necessarily mean that the entire fishery in which it occurs must be severely constrained while that stock is rebuilt. And that's language that obviously has an effect on my thinking for quite a long time. And I mention it here today to bring people's attention to it. It's about overfished, not necessarily about overfishing. So, all right, with that said, this council picked up on that point in formal correspondence to the National Marine Fisheries Service in 2006. A letter was sent. Some questions were asked, four or five, maybe six questions were asked, seeking clarification, seeking better understanding. And then we got a response back from Bill Hogarth a few months later, Bill, who was then in charge of the service. And Bill's relatively short response was, don't use the mixed stock exception. Our questions really weren't answered. We were just told, don't use it because of the reauthorization to the Act. All right. So now the council continues to try to achieve optimum yield from the mixed stock fishery as a whole. And I continue to believe, and I think most council members continue to believe, that sacrificing very large amounts of yield from the fishery as a whole for the benefit of one stock is not in the best interest of the nation. And again, I'm reflecting on congressional intent. And that loss occurred, of course, through Framework 42. And now, of course, it's going to occur through the proposed interim rule. And that's one reason why I'm saying what I'm saying now, because this motion has huge implications for what we do with the interim rule and for what happens down the road, because if this is adopted, we are going to buy into all of the logic expressed by the service, and I understand why they presented that logic, but still, it's inconsistent with my attitude, my feelings, and my interpretation of congressional intent. So, I'll end by simply saying that because the service is willing to close the entire southern New England area, with some of those modest exceptions, and is willing to accept the consequences of that action, all in the interest of addressing one stock, southern New England winter flounder, the service's report takes on even more significance. It takes on great significance. I, you know, respectfully have to disagree, you know, with the findings in the report. I personally can't accept, I can't follow the course you are charting. And as I've just stated, I believe that the service is acting contrary to congressional intent. I prefer to be more in step with congressional purposes stated in the Act, especially the purposes pertaining to achieving optimum yield from the fishery as a whole, all the while accounting for social and economic needs of the states. So with that said, Mr. Chairman, I'd like to make a motion to substitute. I would move. I couldn't give it to you in written form. I'm sorry, Karen. I would move the council disagree with the conclusions of the National Marine Fisheries Service report to the court, that the mixed stock exception cannot be applied to the Northeast multi-species fishery, and request the service reconsider its position and make it consistent with congressional intent that Number one, optimum yield should be from the fishery as a whole. And two, one stock should not dictate severe constraints on the fishery as a whole while that stock is being rebuilt. So that is my motion to substitute, Mr. Chairman.
There a second? Seconded by Rodney. Doug Grout.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. As you might expect, the state of New Hampshire has a different opinion on congressional intent than the service, as well as what the mixed stock exception rule under National Standard 1 says, the 1998, and what our intent with being a part of the lawsuit was to have this mixed stock exception seriously considered and analyzed by the service. And specifically, I hope that they would seriously consider and analyze different days at sea counting rates and how they would apply under that rule, as well as potentially different trip limits. And with the overall goal of determining if there is a greater long-term net benefit to the nation that could be realized under the mixed stock exception. I feel that this document expresses the opinions of the service, but is not a serious analysis of the mixed stock exception, which is what we're looking for. So I am going to support the substitute motion here. And that's what I have to say. Thank you.
Jamala.
Yeah, I agree with Dr. Pierce. I have had many conversations with congressional people and Senate people, and they can relate to me, and at least in my opinion, that congressional intent was as Dr. Pierce has described. And I look on page 3, and I look at the exceptions, and I think you could make the argument that you could make an analysis that would conclude that it would be in the best interest of the nation long term to maintain this fishing fleet, not gut it for one stock, and to get more yield out of the resource that we've been foregoing for the last several years of, I don't know, $100 million or more. You could demonstrate that we've already tried to mitigate and modify fleet behavior and gear selection modifications, but we're foregoing all this yield. And I think that's the intent, is to find a way to get this yield into the country's economy so that we can maintain good fishing jobs and feed the nation. So I can't conclude that this analysis has looked at that, those type of things, and reported on that. Either that we could make that argument or we couldn't make that argument. So I will support the substitute motion.
Dave Gaethel.
Yes. Actually, just like to read a little bit of the actual ruling here. On page 4, it says that Commerce at least seriously consider and analyze the mixed stock exception, which Commerce admits it did not do. Its reasons are time constraints and the unlikelihood the exception would apply even after serious consideration and analysis. Such reasons are without merit. That, to me, is about as blunt a statement as the court can make, that it doesn't want to hear a rehash of the applicability of the law. In the letter that has been proposed that we endorse, it says analyze the applicability. For those of you who don't know, David Pierce and I attended the hearing. I sat there and watched the give and take between the attorneys. And I found the judge to be a very plain-spoken man. I don't think he's a person who finds 35 meanings for the word is or something like that. I think he's like the rest of us. He sees one. As such, I was very concerned with the original motion made. I was going to suggest to Gene that perhaps he might have to pack a toothbrush if he put that letter in front of the judge. But if the counsel got drawn into it, I would suggest that you all might have to pack a toothbrush. And the reason I say that is my father was an attorney. And when I was a little kid, he used to periodically pack a little bag but no clothes. And I go, well, where are you going, Dad, if you're not bringing any clothes? He said, well, I'm going to talk to a judge today, and he's not going to like what I have to say. So I got to pack a toothbrush, which meant that the judge might keep him there, and he might not be coming home. The judge said very plainly, analyze the mixed stock exception. To me, that means take the, I think it was six alternatives we had in Framework 42, and apply the mixed stock exception to them, come up with the differential days at sea counting rates that would have applied, and come up with the trip limits that would have applied. But, again, assuming that the service wishes to go forward with this letter and they've asked for our comments on it, I would like to provide some comments on the letter as it's currently written, even though I don't agree with the letter at all. I don't see the connection that the service draws in the paragraph after it lists the exceptions. I just don't see the connection there. It allows overfishing. That's what the mixed stock exception says. And it does not say anything about overfished. Something can be overfished and still rebuilt. And I'll give you an example a little bit later on. In the next paragraph, on pages 3 and 4, all the discussion about 2009, the new National Standard 1 guidelines, the judge repeatedly said, I don't want to hear about them. He said they're irrelevant to this discussion. This discussion is about the 1998 guidelines. That's what was in effect when Framework 42 was promulgated. He said, even if you've gone back, corrected them, and changed them, it's irrelevant to the discussion. And I would also note, I know Gene said today that they're going to go into effect February 17th, but as I understand it, President Obama, when he took office, suspended all new regulations pending review. So they're not in effect at this moment. The 1998 ones still are in effect, and that's what the judge cares about. So everything discussing 2009, if you wish to go forward with the letter, I would suggest you remove it, because I don't think that's what the judge wants to hear. Lastly, I'd like to say that why is this so important to me issue? Why do I care so much about the mixed stock exception? Yes, I care about it relative to Framework 42, but it has a lot to do with where we go from here on in. And if we use the rationale that's provided in this letter, we will never be able to get off of single species management. Never, ever, ever. We will never move to ecosystem-based management because we will continue to manage to whatever is the weakest stock. And so no matter how economically or biologically unimportant that stock is, it'll not only drive the bus in groundfish, it may drive the bus in any fishery in which it pops up. Let's use windowpane flounder as an example. It could pop up in scallops, in who knows what else. Certainly in scallops it'll pop up. So are we going to shut down the scallop fishery because we can't apply the mixed stock exception because they catch a couple of windowpane flounders? I mean, this could be carried to a very disconcerting conclusion. I personally believe in ecosystem-based management. I think single species management had a use when stocks were severely depleted and we had to start somewhere, one stock at a time. But once stocks start to rebuild, they start to interact with each other. One of the speakers came earlier to the microphone today, I do not believe you can have all stocks at maximum sustainable yield at the same time. And without a mixed stock exception, we're going to be forced to drive this thing to that illogical conclusion. I disagree with the rationale that as long as a stock is overfished, you cannot use the mixed stock exception. You could, for example, show that a large year class will recruit to the fishery within 10 years, ending both the overfished and the overfishing condition. Such an example would be Georges Bank haddock. Once we saw that enormous year class enter the fishery, even though the fishery was still overfished and overfishing was occurring, we could certainly logically conclude that assuming we didn't wipe out that
giant year class before it entered the fishery that the fishery would rebuild. So I do not see the logic that has been provided here between overfished and overfishing. I think Congress was quite clear in the reason they put this in there. They probably may not have understood the nuance between overfished and overfishing that we've all had to deal with. They thought they were putting something in there that said, if a stock is a minor stock and it's undergoing overfishing, we'll basically forgo that for a period of time under these guidelines. Not being listed on as an ESA is substantially different from being overfished. In other words, you can't drive it to biological or economic extinction. That's very different from overfished. I also think it was a way to deal with the fact that we offer man-made timelines here. We have set a 10-year rebuilding plan. Nature didn't set that plan. We did. That's the arrogance of man. And Congress said, well, we deal with a lot of agencies that tend to be a little bit arrogant towards nature. The Army Corps and FEMA are two that come to mind. And because of that, we're going to provide a mixed stock exception so that if we get into a situation where even though we've said you got to do it in 10 years, it's very plain it's not going to happen. We're not going to shut down the ocean to recreational and commercial fishing to save a minor stock because it isn't rebuilding in 10 years. So, personally, I don't want to see NOAA added to the list of organizations that are have a degree of arrogance that they start telling nature what to do, when it's got to do it, and how long it's got to do it. I think we must have a mixed stock exception to deal with minor stocks that chronically underperform in rebuilding, or we will deny the American public huge amounts of sustainably caught fresh seafood and recreational opportunities as we continue to order nature to comply with man-made timetables that nature may have no intention of meeting. So I would ask that you go back and provide an alternative with a broader interpretation that is in keeping with the intent of Congress when they wrote this exception into Magnuson. So I obviously support the motion to substitute. Thank you.
Anyone who hasn't spoke? Frank Blount.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm not sure on this motion, but I'm a little troubled by the middle part of it, where it says, I have trouble reading it here where I am, request the service and make it consistent with congressional intent. I'm not sure we can tell the service to make it consistent. You're telling the service what to do. You can tell them what you want for an outcome. But I think what we want here, and I'm not quite sure what the words would be, is to have the service reconsider it, taking in account congressional intent. I think it's what you say. Well, then you would be telling the service to make sure you look at congressional intent when you reconsider this letter. But as what you're doing now is you're saying you can reconsider this, but you have to come up with the way we want it or don't reconsider it. So I don't know if the maker wants to wordsmith it a little or.
David?
Well, it's all about a congressional intent, and whatever we do, we, the service, it should be consistent with congressional intent. So the motion as it's currently worded, I think, is appropriate.
Anyone else in the council? Pat.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Well, obviously we do have a difference of opinion here. Congress set a 10-year timeline on rebuilding. They provided specific exceptions to that timeline. The mixed stock exception wasn't one of those specific exceptions. The agency may not, in fact, agree with the 10-year requirement, but that's what's in the law. And Congress went further in their recent reauthorization of the Magnuson Act to make it clear that overfishing was to end immediately. So we have a fundamental difference on what the intent of Congress is. I think, you know, we've laid out what we see as the requirements of the statute and the intent of Congress. If the council disagrees with that, then I think that they need to provide their analysis and justification for why they disagree with that.
Gene?
Yeah, just to amplify further what Pat is saying, there seems to be a perception that Congress created a mixed stock exception. It did not do so. It was a creation of the agency in 1998 in the guidelines against a lot of opposition to that interpretation to provide additional flexibility. Congress, certainly a guideline does not trump a clear statutory requirement. And there's a basic misconception of that. There's nothing in the legislative history that speaks directly to mixed stock exception. And even if there were, the plain language of the statute overrides, this is just general legal construction, overrides any ambiguity that might be created by legislative history. But there isn't any legislative history unless you can point, you know, it would be helpful if you could point to what you think, particularly with respect to the recent 2006 Act. Any ambiguity that might have existed before regarding the 1998 guidelines was cleared up by Congress. Knowing that that guideline was in place, Congress now added language that was not in the 1996 Sustainable Fisheries Act that says any, as Pat just said, any overfished stock, overfishing on any overfished stock must end immediately. It makes it even clearer. There is no other interpretation of that plain language. I don't know what legislative history you're pointing to that would overcome the plain statement of the current statute. As Pat said, we're not pushing this. We have argued many times that artificial timelines don't make sense for these stocks. But Congress has imposed these requirements on us, and we must abide by them. So I don't know how we can read the current statute certainly any different than it currently exists. The guidelines are unambiguous at this point in time. I believe, Pat, that this rule has been given permission by the White House to go forward and be effective on February 17th as an exception to the overall new presidential order on rules. So I don't know what we're going to do. I mean, the plain language of the statute now is totally at odds with this idea that there is a mixed stock exception. Congress would have created it if they intended that to happen in light of this controversy over the 1998 version of the mixed stock exception, and they didn't. And that is how courts will construct legislative intent. Mark Gibson.
Thank you, John. I don't support the motion to substitute. I think it's clear in the Sustainable Fisheries Act and in the guidelines that were promulgated subsequent to that, the mixed stock exception wouldn't apply. And Jim Maudlin started to list down the exceptions where it could be used, but he forgot to get to item number 3. And it says above that all of these conditions are satisfied. I don't think in the case of Southern New England winter flounder, any time in the foreseeable future, you're going to be able to show that the level of fishing mortality that's being imposed on that stock will not cause any species or evolutionary significant units to require protection. We already have instances where units of winter flounder don't exist in Narragansett Bay anymore, and they are significant evolutionary units because they home back to their natal estuaries. They don't exist anymore in some places. So I'm convinced that it doesn't apply, and I would oppose this motion.
Yes, I oppose this motion. We're consistently trying to lower the bar, and that's what this motion would do, and we're constantly trying to just reach or, in this case, avoid a minimum statutory standard and selectively listening to or interpreting congressional intent As far as simultaneously reaching MSY in a multi-species fishery, I would say that that is in fact possible, and that we need to be thinking about the fact that biomass at MSY is simply not biomass of virgin stocks. And I think that's what the prevailing wisdom seems to have been developing on this, that somehow we're going to get back to virgin biomass of every single managed stock. Often, BMSY is much, much less than that, and can be, in fact, half of that. The 10-year rebuilding time frame, people, I think, selectively read the Magnuson Act. And, in fact, the way the statute reads is that, yes, in fact, we have this 10-year target that we have to shoot for unless the biology of the stock dictates otherwise. And that's what the statute says. And that's, in fact, what this council has exercised and did in Amendment 13 for a number of stocks, including yellowtail, if I'm remembering correctly. Those extend out to 20 years. And redfish originally, despite its current rebuild status, was even more than that. So this council has exercised the flexibility that is in the statute beyond that 10-year rebuilding time frame. I think people need to go back and look at that and remind themselves that there is flexibility in there. So for those reasons, for the reasons, the legal reasons that have been spelled out here very clearly, we need to listen to what the current law and the current guidelines are saying. This is spelled out clearly. If the judge decided to say, for some reason, say, okay, we're only going to follow the 1998 guidelines, then that's clearly spelled out here. And if he decides to follow the 2002 or 2009 guidelines, then that's spelled out separately. And that's very clearly spelled out. This was the case then. This is the case now. So if there's a desire to go back and just and look at what the guidance was 10 years ago, the judge can do this. So thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Roddy.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. This goes back to Mr. Gibson's statement. I don't think it's fair to use what's happened in the state of Rhode Island for the flounder fishery, because if anybody goes offshore to southern New England, there's more flounders now than there was 10 years ago. You haven't got flounders in Narragansett Bay is because the birds have come back, the seals have come back, and your outfall from your power plant up there has come back. Till the birds take down a few more planes, I don't think we're going to address that issue. Thank you.
Go ahead, Mark.
Well, I know better than anybody else in this room what the effect of the power plants are in Narragansett Bay, and that's not the whole story. You have massive fishing, overfishing on this mixed group of winter flounder. When they're in the federal waters, they peel back, come to their home estuaries. The simple fact are they're not coming back in the numbers they should. Why? Because they've all been killed somewhere else before they could come home and spawn. So I reject that comment.
All right. Dr. Pierce.
I again appreciated the passion that Gene showed a little while ago. It always charges my batteries, and I'm not a very passionate guy, so I can't match his passion. However, I am very sympathetic to the National Marine Fisheries Service's perspective. Indeed, it is a conundrum. It is a puzzle. There is a mixed message coming from Congress. And that's why I said at the very beginning that I'm going by what's at the very beginning of the Act, where it states the purposes of the Act, its intent, and that hasn't changed. Not really. There's no way in the world Congress would have agreed to the fact that it's a change of attitude, that, you know, one stock would completely shut down an entire fishery. And certainly that wouldn't be the attitude today in light of the problems we have with today's economy. I suspect Congress might reflect on this action in the near future if indeed we do decimate the fishery out of southern New England and elsewhere, and, of course, contribute to further pressure within the Gulf of Maine, and who knows what that will result in terms of hard TACs down the road for sectors and whatever's in place for the common pool. This council, let's not forget, we did object. We strenuously objected to the change in the mixed stock exception language, and that is reflected in comments we submitted on the National Standard No. 1 guidelines
We did not want those guidelines changed. We said that very clearly. They have been changed. They will be implemented in a revised form. And that's unfortunate because it does take away a tremendous amount of flexibility. Again, the service believes it's responding to congressional intent, and I can't fault them for that because that's what the service believes. It's the perspective, and I have to respect that perspective. I disagree with it, however. The guidelines are advisory. They don't have the force of law. So we have the curious puzzle, I think it's a curious puzzle, another puzzle, that we have the new guidelines, but we have the old guidelines, so which one do we use when they're both advisory? Well, clearly we have to use the new ones now because the service will have spoken on the issue. But the service also at the same time understands that this 10-year rebuilding period isn't necessarily a wise way to go, but they're going with it because they indeed have said that it's congressional intent. I'm not lowering the bar for anything. It's one thing I do not do and will not do regarding groundfish. I will not lower the bar regarding conservation. However, I will not lower the bar, I should say raise the bar for the fishing industry, raise the bar to the point that the boats fail. They're already hard, stressed. These are very difficult economic times, and our interim action that we've requested the service implement is significant and tough, but it doesn't put the industry in the southern New England area out of business, and I won't go over that ground again. So I'm not being selective. I'm focusing on congressional intent, and I just can't buy into a sacrificing of all the optimum yield for all these stocks that we're going to have to sacrifice with the interim rule and this, with the original motion, as I said, will tie our hands for some time to come. The motion to substitute, I think, is a reasonable motion. I don't believe it's tied to what the judge will do. This is what the council says. This is the council decision. The judge will decide what the judge wants to decide. The judge will receive this report with or without council comments and act accordingly. I have no idea what the judge will do, but still, we'll wait and see on that one. So that's my opinion. That's my passion. And I'm still strongly in favor of this motion that I think is a wise one.
Anything further from the council? Dave Gith.
Yeah, obviously support everything David just said. I think he said it better than I can. I'd also request a roll call vote on this important issue.
Anything further from the council? You ready for the question?
Please read the motion and respond yes, no, or abstain. Rodney Avila.
Yes.
Frank Blount.
No.
Rip Cunningham.
No.
David Pierce.
Yes.
Jim Fair.
Yes.
David Gafel.
Yes.
Mike Leary.
Yes.
Sally McGee.
No.
Pat Kirkle.
No.
Terry Stockwell.
Yes.
Doug Grout.
Yes.
Jimmy Onlin.
Yes.
Dave Preble.
No.
Dana Rice.
Yes.
Mark Alexander.
Yes.
Mark Gibson.
No.
Mary Beth Tooley.
Yes.
Motion carries.
Okay, that was a motion of substitute, so we need to take the vote again. Anything further?
On the main motion, please respond yes, no, or abstain. Mary Beth Tooley.
Yes.
Mark Gibson.
No.
Mark Alexander.
Yes.
Dana Rice.
Taking the vote again, Dana.
Yeah. Sorry.
David Preble.
No.
Jimmy Onlin.
Yes.
Doug Grout.
Yes.
Terry Stockwell.
Yes.
Pat Kirkle.
No.
Sally McGee.
No.
Mike Leary.
Yes.
David Gaethel.
Yes.
Jim Fair.
Yes.
David Pierce.
Yes.
Rip Cunningham.
No.
Frank Blount.
No.
Rodney Avila.
Yes.
Motion carries.
Anything further under Framework 42 discussion? Pat Kirkle.
Just a clarification, Mr. Chairman. So that means that the council is going to undertake this analysis. It's not really a question, I guess.
Apparently, we're going to have to find a way to comply. Anything further under Framework 42? Okay. We're going to take a quick break here to make a transition. Okay, I'm going to ask Karen if you could put that motion back up on the board. I want to make a couple of comments so that we have that expectations are in line with what's going to happen. We read this motion, it says the council disagrees and is going to write a letter and ask the service to reconsider its position that it presented to us today in draft form. We don't have the resources or the time to go through an exhaustive analysis at this juncture because we've got Amendment 16 to work on. I wanted to do this in an effort to be transparent, that upon reflecting on what the motion says and talking to staff and the executive director and other council members, I want to make sure there isn't an expectation that the council is going to generate a 1,000-page document supporting this position. We simply can't do that. What we can do is write a letter, as this motion dictates, and submit it to the service and ask for their reconsideration. And in that letter, we can include and cite our failure to have resources, both staff time and the timeline that we're under, as constraints in our inability to provide a full-fledged analysis. Just wanted to be clear. I wanted the council to be aware of that. Dave Gaethel.
I don't want to get into a bunch of hypothetical what-ifs, but what if the judge comes back? I mean, again, Gene reads his judgment one way. I read it very differently. And to me, I thought he's saying that you should provide me with the options that were contained in Framework 42 with the trip limits and the differential days at C County. I think we already have that done, using the mixed stock exception. If he comes back and says, I want that, are we going to provide it, or is the service going to have to provide it? Basically, what happens here?
I'm not sure, Dave. I'd have to respond that we're very busy trying to put Amendment 16 together. We're already a year behind. We've got an interim action that's going to hit us square between the eyes. You know, we're as stressed and strapped to get things completed as anyone else. So I can't go down the hypothetical route, but I can tell you we don't have the resources to write a big full-blown analysis at this time. Dr. Pierce.
Well, my assumption is, consistent with the judge's order, that the report as provided by the service will be presented to the judge. The judge indicated that they didn't have to apply the mixed duck exception. He just wanted an analysis, and they've done that. I mean, the council's taken a position regarding it, but still the position relates to applicability, not to the fact that the analysis was done. So that's my assumption. The report will be provided, and then the judge will act accordingly, I assume. Again, he's the judge, and I don't know what he's inclined to do, but to me, that's what will now happen.
David, you were out of the room when I started, but I brought this back up because I wanted the expectations of the council members to be in line with what we're going to do, which is to draft this letter and send it to the service as the motion directs us. When we took the break, I heard people thinking or commenting that they thought we were going to put together a big analysis, a challenging analysis, and that simply isn't going to happen. So I wanted to nip that in the bud. Okay. It's about 12 o'clock now. We're going to break for lunch a half hour early today and come back at 1 o'clock, and we'll start Ground Fish Amendment 16 discussions. We're going to get started.